see my life was a lonely one, and I was their mama's only son, with no idea what I'm gonna become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long ago. Then I finally saw the sign, and I made it on down the line, one step at a time. I feel better, I can smile at it now. I feel better, oh, better, and even a little bit still better. Oh, have mercy on me. Oh, it's probably plain to see that I got a whole lot of pain in me, and it will always remain in me. So cold, it's a crying shame. Yet here I am trying again, 'cause I refuse to die in pain. The circumstances put soul in me, and there ain't no holding me. I've got a heart made of gold in me. Can you believe this is where I've been? And when adversity comes again, I'll deal with it then. I feel better, I can laugh at it now. I feel better, oh, better, and even a little bit still better. Oh, have mercy on me.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it may be, wherever you are in the known universe, listening to this broadcast, listening to this show, listening to this podcast. Again, this is Dr. Hinton. This is Pastor Joe Hill. And we want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Synergy, conversations on religion, spirituality, consciousness, identity, group identity, and everything else in between and around and around the way. For those that would like to participate in the show, excuse me, you can contact us. You can send an email at synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. Now we're trying this podcast thing. You can log on to mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. That's mahogany, love, and light all together. Mahogany, love, and light. .podbean.com. Okay? And if you catch us live, you can get into the chat room. You can interact live and in real time. You can ask questions and we'll respond to those questions. As well as, you, if you have the Podbean app, just go and download their Podbean app. You can call into the show, actually. And if not, you can always go to Mahogany Love and Light, and you can listen to not only this show, but any of the shows that we've done previously. We've done some pretty good shows and had some pretty amazing conversations just about religion, spirituality, spiritual awareness, and a lot of other things in between. Okay, so there are about, when you go to Mahogany Love and Light, there are three shows up. You'll see Love Lines, you'll see Brother to Brother, and you'll see Synergy. So if you just scroll through the list of shows, you can see all of the Synergy shows are there, and they have a nice flow to them. And again, as we said before, a lot of what we do, again, we're just two thinkers, two philosophers who are interested in sort of trying to get to the heart of questions that people have been asking for centuries. What is my purpose? Why am I here? Is there a God? And what is love? Okay, so that's a larger part of what not only this particular show, but the show in its entirety, and all these shows are centered around. Okay, so just trying to get to the heart of what what people have tried to answer for generation after generation after generation, okay? And again, it's also important to know that a lot of this is organic. We think of, we are answering a lot of times this stuff in on the fly. We come in and think about, say, hey, what's on your mind today? And it all started because of, we would just sit around a lot of times and have good conversations. And was like, you know, maybe we should start recording some of this stuff.
Yeah.
So, because there was times that we would have these bits and pieces of and little nuggets that were gold, and it was gone after we talked about it over lunch. So, again, here we are. Okay. So, how you doing today, sir?
I'm good. Looking forward to trying out this new format.
Good deal.
See where the conversation goes.
Yeah. So. We'll see how it goes for the day. So I guess the question of the day deals with religion. And is religion a good thing or a bad thing? Is religion... So our question of the day is religion a good thing or a bad thing? Do people need religion to, like, do we need religion to be good people? Or is religion something used as a tool to control the masses, to control people, to control ways of thought? Do people need religion? Did we need it before and we don't need it now? Have we progressed in our thinking? Have we progressed in the way with which we get information that we don't need religion anymore? So this is where we are. I think first we probably need to try, and I'll throw this, and again, this is Keelan Henson. I'm going to throw this out to Joe Hill. We probably need to start by trying to differentiate between, is there a difference between religion and spirituality?
Yeah, and this is one of the things Keelan and I talk about a lot. There is and there isn't. I think part of the hang-up is the baggage, the definitions people bring to the word religion. If you think about a formalized institution of belief, of doctrine, of practice, that's typically what folks are thinking about when they talk about religion. Most simply, religion is a set of ritual, which doesn't have to necessarily be something some institution writes off on or insists upon, but a set of ritual that you use in your pursuit of spirituality to enhance, to deepen that. For example, someone's religion may be to get up every morning and have a cup of coffee and meditate, or to get up and have a cup of coffee and read. May not be the Bible, maybe Fast Company or Wall Street Journal, whatever your ritualistic practices are for your life. Some folks would say that's religion. But then when we talk about the question, I think we're talking about is those formalized groups, those formalized sects, if you will, denominations, different faith groups, versus spirituality, which is a personal thing. Spirituality is your own personal experience of, sense of, something deeper, something broader than you, something greater than you, and you try to understand that for yourself, whether you borrow from what religions have to say, the formal religions have to say, and how you feel you can best feel a part of that bigger something, or feel best to relate to that bigger something. That's your private spirituality. But in that, you may develop your own set of rhythms and practices that really become your religion, whether you want to call it that or not.
So you said a religion is set practices and rituals and stuff like that. What differentiates a ritual from a cult?
I think when you get to cult, then you are talking about a sense of control. And really... you don't have to get into what we officially brand as cults to talk about control, because some of our known, respected, beloved religious traditions have in them groups and individuals who treat that tradition even in a cultish way. In other words, you must believe this, You must do this thing or that thing because I'm the authority of this group and I say thus and so. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone is trying to remove your independent thought and insist that you yield entirely to their authority, whether they abuse that authority or not, I think when we say abuse, then we want to call it a cult because a cult's a negative. But anytime you're supposed to suspend your own ability to think and choose for yourself and act and yield that entirely to some other human being, in terms of what they say God is or God isn't, what good is or good isn't, that's a cult. If you can't think, if you can't come and go as you please, if someone else has to tell you everything to think or believe or do, that's a cult. That may be a marriage.
sounds like my last marriage. Moving forward.
Yeah, do you get to think? Do you get to breathe independently? If not, it's a cult.
Hmm. Okay. So is religion, are we at a space and a place now that we don't need someone to tell us, do we need to be led?
Yeah.
Do we need, like, we can read now. There was a point that the pastor or the preacher was the only person that had a Bible, that had a religious text, was the only person that could read, and we needed this person to read it to us and interpret it to us. We can read now. We got the internet. We got libraries. Yeah. Like, we have ways of accessing information. The question is, does there have to be a church on every corner? As a matter of fact, why is there a church on every corner?
Well, because even the folks in the churches decide, I've got it right, you don't, or I want to stretch out and do my own thing. But then when I do my own thing, I want someone else to follow my own thing. So it's independence and yet still propagating a sense of dependence among the people at the same time. In other words, I want to be the big dog. I think that's a lot of it, just to be honest. It's great to see anybody trying to spread truth and love and light and joy, but often it's more about I want to be a big dog somewhere.
Okay.
I want my own fishbowl. You know?
And again, this isn't just, to be clear, anybody's out there listening and is it H.W. Wheeler, 482? We thank you for joining us. This is not just about Christianity. This is about the mosque on the corner or the synagogue or whatever. Are these places the question is, are these places necessary or is it all? And maybe this is leaking a little bit into conspiracy, and we've got into conspiracy every time we talk about spirituality. We always end up talking about conspiracy in some way, shape, form, or fashion.
I think that happens because religion lends itself so easily to someone who would be a manipulative person. Religion tends to lend itself so easily to the person who wants to take advantage of that as a tool. I've often said, you know, we talk about guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Yeah.
Religion doesn't kill people. People who decide to manipulate religion, you know, kill people.
I like that. That's
kill souls.
Yeah. Is it necessary? Do you think it's necessary at this point? Like, can people find the truth? Like those who have this spark, or those who have this spark, or this sort of motivation to look for something larger than them. Are they better served going out and going to the library and searching and reading for themselves, or are they better off stopping in one of these places? Are they better off having places to go that have a doctrine that they can go and explore and say, I don't like this, I'll try another. No, I don't like this, I'll try another. No, I don't like this, I'll try another. What method is best?
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's some different ways to think. What I would say I think is best, much like we've said in the past about our education system, is not a system, regardless of the religious strain, whatever religion it is, is not a system which tells you everything, but a system that teaches you to handle the information at hand responsibly and competently for yourself, to learn to think about it for yourself. So, for example, let's you know, I hate to keep saying Christianity, but it's the easiest one. So you have the Bible, you can read it, and you could go somewhere and somebody could tell you what it means, or somebody could help you learn to engage that text and understand some of the historical background, to understand some of the context of what you're looking at, and help you begin to understand for yourself what that text has to say, and to give you space if your understanding differs a little.
Yeah.
And by and large, the system doesn't leave room for that. The system says, we've got it all figured out already. Here's what it is. You are welcome now to sign off, or keep quiet, or go down the street, or pick some other religious system.
Yeah.
So I think what we most need now is, if we need a system at all, it's a system in which the people in that system understand their role to be to help people think, to help people grow in their own understanding of whatever they're professing to be truth.
And we might have touched on this before. I wonder how alluring is that control and power to anybody.
Yeah,
for a room full of people to look at you, look up at you.
Yeah.
For answers, for guidance.
Yeah.
How do you, for like I said, whether it's the pastor, it's the guy at the synagogue, it's the guy at the mosque or whatever, like I'm amazed at how do you keep yourself, you know what I mean? Like, how do you keep yourself clean of being drawn in by that allure? See, that's what scares me. Like they say, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, I wonder if it is that type of power is so enticing, whether you are the mayor or the president of a university or the president of the United States or the pastor or the local leader of your whatever group.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Or the imam or the Baha'i group, whoever. I think a lot of it has to do with the health and self-awareness of that person. That as you look at that group, whether you look at that as your group, your followers, or you see them as peers who you're just trying to help think, who you would be glad to see surpass you or go beyond you, or to be able to come off on their own to think clearly, not have to go start another group, but to be a group that can stay in conversation together about what you're learning, what you're experiencing. I think folks with even the best intentions and maybe a very good intention in their heart can still out of that feel, for good reasons, I need to tell you everything you need to know. I need to control this for you. That's a personality thing. There are some folks that think it is in your best interest. Genuinely, they think it, self-deceptively, but I genuinely think the best thing for you is just to listen and trust me and do what I say.
I can remember when our kids were little.
Yeah.
I can remember going to a PTA meeting.
Yeah.
And it's Parent Teacher Association, right?
Right.
So when we went, the teachers were like, well, okay, these are the topics and this is what we're going to do.
Right.
And then they told us and everybody left. And afterwards, I went up and I spoke with one of the teachers and I was like, you know, I thought this was Parent Teacher Association.
Right.
You know, and I don't feel like the parents had any, I mean, obviously, you know, you remember me. Yeah. I was at the school every day.
Right.
I was reading to the kids on Friday. Yeah. Like, I want to be involved. Like, so they was like, oh, yeah, you know we want to hear what you have to say.
Right.
And I was like, no. I said, nobody got to say so, you know. And this teacher told me, oh, you know, they really don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's like, you know, like they'll get in here and they'll talk a lot and they'll talk about nothing and they really don't, you know, a lot of them, some of them are uneducated and they really don't know what needs to be done.
They
so,
don't know
you know,
enough.
We talk about it, we get it together and we let them know the best course of action.
Yeah. You don't know what you need. So
yeah.
let me with all benevolence tell you what you need and what needs doing and then you just do it. You're
because,
welcome.
Because and she was like, you know, well, you know, cause we're educated.
Right.
So it's like, I wonder, is that the sort of thing like the guy in the synagogue or the guy, the pastor or whoever in whatever religion, like they may feel like they have a closer connection to God or they've been to divinity school or whatever and they're like, these people are obviously here because they're lost. They really don't know.
Yeah.
Like their intentions are good. You don't know.
Right.
Let me guide you or let me lead you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, the tradition in a system and in systems with an education component, the tradition itself and the education component tends to instill in you intentionally or unintentionally the idea that, yeah, you are the one. You must bear the responsibility of teaching. You are the special one. You've got to teach this stuff. You've got to do it. And even if you want to, you could even take that on, but still recognize the difference between being someone who is educated enough to help bring others into their own journey of understanding, or educated enough to just tell them what to do. So you can still, but I find that there's a pressure that's put upon the leaders from the system, and sometimes from the education, to be the one that knows it all, that does it all.
Yeah.
To prove that, especially if you're getting paid, to prove that you're earning your paycheck.
Yeah.
So I'll just do it all, which really does a great disservice to anybody who's really trying to relate to, God, or that something big, or the universe, whatever it is you're trying to whatever you're relating to.
Yeah.
That when you just take over and say, let me do it for you, I'll tell you what to think, what to do. They miss that. But the system does drive that kind of self-perception.
Yeah. What scares me, and what I've learned from studying identity, so, I teach a conspiracy theory class.
Yeah.
And we do a whole 3 weeks on nothing but cults.
Yeah.
And the kids always say, how can, to join a cult, a part of what people say is, the first question we ask is, what type of person do you think joins a cult?
Yeah.
And my students usually go, oh, you got to be dumb, you got to be stupid. And then when I show them the research, usually highly educated people.
Oh, yeah.
It's not necessarily what you know or how much you know, but in fact, they're people who are looking for something.
Yes.
They feel like something is missing in organized religion for a while, and bits and pieces didn't make sense to them.
Yeah.
So then from there, again, the thing that I understand about identity and people is that cult leaders understand two things, that people are inherently followers.
Yeah.
The average person looks to be led.
Yeah, people, I think that's hold fair. On.
People look to be led.
Yeah.
And people have a need to believe in something, in anything.
Yeah.
Like, those are two main things that most leaders know. Like, those are the qualities of being a good leader.
Yeah.
Hitler was a good leader.
You can't deny that.
I didn't say he was a good person.
Right.
There's a difference between being a good person and a good leader.
He was an effective leader. If that bothers somebody, you can't deny he was an effective leader.
He understood.
Frighteningly so.
Yeah. He understood those two main things, that the average person is a follower. They look to be led.
Yeah.
And people have this sense, people have a need to believe in something. They want to believe in something or anything.
Yeah.
So that is what, I think that's what, sometimes that's what scares me about organized religion, in a sense, is that there are people out there that know that people have a need to believe in something, and they look to be led.
Yeah.
And if I know that, it puts me in a position to manipulate that.
Right.
If I have that in my mind and my spirit, I can use that and manipulate that to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that's very true. And then to go the extra step of what you typically see then is, eventually what they'll do, if there's any sense that their supremacy, if you will, or control is slipping, they then tend to create a narrative, a dynamic between their group and the rest of the world that requires then of the follower an allegiance.
Yeah,
that either you follow on with this, mm-hmm. or you're betraying something deep. Or the person that recognizes that can take people like that and help them begin to find their way. People do want to follow, but a good leader can help people navigate the anxiety of finding my own way, because that's why you follow. There's no anxiety there. I can just, you tell me what to do. If I got to figure out life for myself, that might be scary as hell to somebody.
Yeah.
But if I can have somebody else just tell me. But to get to a point as a leader where you say, let me tell you what I know, what I've experienced, but not as an absolute. Let me just tell you what I know, what I've experienced, and let me help you begin to think for yourself and define for yourself.
You asked, Colin, you just brought up something. Is religion necessary? Like, can people do this on their own? Like, that is, no, don't answer too quickly now. I want you to think about the everyday average person.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's, can people...
Well, we got to go back with, to the conversation with, we had before about with, the everyday average person.
Well, yeah, with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Without some anchor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, think about it. You do all your messing up. You hang up. You just, woo, you do all your cussing out your coworkers.
Yeah.
You kicking it on the weekend. And then what brings you back to your center, your moral anchor is you can go to church, hear something good, and it'll rein you back in. You know what I mean? Do people need that? Do we need a place that will bring us back to center? Is that necessary? Like think about it. If there were no churches,
yeah.
There were no mosques,
no
there were no synagogues. Like, could people really go out here on their own and like be good people and like just figure it out? Or do we need something to remind us? Like, even if you do dirt, you know, you see a church on the corner, just yeah. The sight of something religious, you go, nah, I'm not gonna sell dope over here.
right.
Like, baby Jesus might get me. Like,
I'm going to go a just building the down the sight, block, but I'll go sell it right here.
Just yeah. The sight of a man with a collar on will make you act, speak, walk, and talk and behave in a certain way, at least for that moment around him.
Yeah.
Do we need those things to make us act right, to make us act, to keep us in line? Or again, are these churches here, is it all about, at the end of the day, is this just another institution used just to control folks? Put it like this. Have churches been used to control people and keep people in line at some point?
Well, you're asking several questions at the same time that overlap. The last question, have they? Absolutely. Yeah. Churches.
And not just churches, just religious institutions.
Religious institutions. Have people use those to control people? Have people use the religious institution to reinforce the institution as opposed to the focus being helping them relate to God? Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to, but not everybody. But it does happen. Does happen. I want to walk back to something because we have talked about this a lot. I guess let me walk back. I'll do them in reverse. So the next one then. Can they be necessary, though, helpful? You talked about the person that has this kind of sense when they come back into a church or in the presence of a quote-unquote godly person. We'll talk about that some other time. How that may call up some different standard within them.
Yeah.
Or I'd like to say it has a reorienting experience.
Yeah.
I think that can also be true. I think there is something real about that because we're communal creatures. And if I come into a communal environment, if I see something better than what I've been living that week, and when I say better, something, let's say something more positive, more life-giving. When I see that, that somehow calls to something in me, it reflects something back to me. Mind you, though, when I was at the bar last night in that community, nothing I was doing was really bothering me because I'm in the midst of a community that reflects that back to me as okay.
Yeah.
But then there's this hunger I feel that some people have, and it is so ingrained in American culture, in modern culture, Western culture. Even somebody who's never been to church still carries this sense of that something special.
Yeah. Which is why I brought this topic up in the first place.
Yeah.
I know people who are atheists,
yeah.
who don't go to church, who've never been to church,
yeah.
and are some of the most kindest,
yeah.
loving people
yeah.
I've ever met in my life.
Right, absolutely.
So that's what made me ponder. Is this institution, like, are institutions still necessary? Like I said, we can read, we can find religious text.
Yeah.
Do we need someone who claims to be closer than God or whatever it is to show me the way?
I don't think, I think, not to show you, maybe to show you, I think the problem is between showing somebody the way and telling somebody, you have to stand behind me the whole rest of your life and walk this way.
Gotcha.
I think there's something to be said for showing somebody, here's the path. And then that gets convoluted. Is it the path to stay out of hell? Is it the path to walk a life worth living? Is it a path that helps you relate to a God? Now, here's the snag with that, that I run into a lot with church folk. The idea that you could show somebody a way of living that helps you relate to God, to some folks, they can't grasp that because they've grown up in a world that tells them that God is off somewhere else. God is evasive. God is inaccessible unless there is some professional or trained person that can be that intercessor for me, which ironically enough, the Bible never says. And for my limited knowledge of some other religions, at least the Abrahamic faiths, they never say in text, you as an individual and God can't relate. And yet these systems drive that. And we've grown up in these systems. We grew up in social systems that drive that. There has to be a special somebody. You can't succeed in school, in work, in social groups, unless there's a certain somebody that helps you get over. And that drives, that still has a drive. But so for the average person, this takes us back to your first question out of that section. When you talk about does the average person, I think you said, do they need religion? The average person who grows up in a society that really doesn't teach you to think. Keelan and I have talked about this before in other podcasts, but the average society that teaches you to listen to what I tell you and feed it back to me, and you'll get my approval to advance. That's what the school system pretty much does.
Yeah.
Listen to me, do what I tell you to do, and then you can move forward. What that creates is adults who have often have a great anxiety and then sometimes a disability to critically think for themselves. And then you have a whole other class of leaders we call politicians who will take advantage and tell you, don't you worry about that. I've got the answers. I can fix it. And how nice it would be to get rid of the anxiety of trying to figure my life out if you're offering to just take the whole thing for me and fix it. It never works, and we just end up mad at them because they never could have hoped to fix all the things that are wrong in my life. But I like the idea of giving that to somebody else.
Again, like you said, we've talked about this before, this notion or idea of free thought. And I always refer back to, again, Molif Asante wrote this book called Race, Rhetoric, and Identity. And he talked about, Molif Asante, Race, Rhetoric, and Identity. And he said the process of nation building. And the process of nation building is you have to create common goals. Like, and it's not an American thing. It's just a nation building thing. You have to create common institutions and common goals that people can rally around. When you have nations, when you have different faiths and different cultures and different beliefs, you can't have people thinking for themselves.
Yeah,
because you'll have just again, not an American thing, a nation building thing. You can't have everybody doing what they want to do.
Yeah,
you can't have everybody thinking how they want to think and doing what they want to do and pray. Like, so you have to find ways.
Why not?
Huh?
But why not?
No, I agree. Again, how can you have control? How can you get, you know what I mean? How can you not have chaos if everybody's doing their own
thing? It's societal chaos when you need somebody to bankroll your society. See, as a nation, I need, we tell ourselves anyway, that the history have told us, if we're going to be a nation, someone's got to build the stuff. Someone's got to serve the infrastructures. Someone's got to be in our military. I need folks to come along with some kind of allegiance and faith in this nation so that when I ask them to pay taxes and keep raising them, they may grumble, but they'll still pay them. I need compliance for the sake of my institution. So to talk about society versus the institutions of government, there's really two different things.
Yeah.
Society could be fine if we had people who taught others not what to think, do, and say all the time, but taught them the general principles of loving one another and valuing the folks around you and relating to one another and recognizing the consequences when we don't relate well to each other. And we left it at that. But it's more than that. We have a government now. Well, let's take it all the way back. We had a king who had vassals who he had to promise something to help him get to power. Someone's got to bankroll all that.
Yeah.
And so if I'm going to get you all to bankroll all that, I have to convince you that this institution, this kingdom, this nation, this empire, whatever it is in fact good.
Hmm.
And then that is still the way that we condition human society.
So that is the point then. So from the time we can crawl and walk and talk, is your perspective that we have been socialized, trained, and ingrained to be dependent on someone else to give you the truth, as opposed to seeking and find the truth for ourselves?
Oh yeah, yeah. Because, and again, this would come from a very benevolent but very mindset of you can't do it on your own. You'll get it wrong on your own. So just listen to me. That's the most benevolent version of it, but it typically gets into, I've got to survive. This becomes my bread and butter now. So I'm now financially, potentially invested in you listening to me. Whatever power I hold in government or politics or whatever the power structure is, even if it is a religious institution, keeping my power, if that becomes more important to the person than helping people discover for themselves a God they can relate to, which it often does,
yeah,
then you end up with these manipulations. Mm-hmm. And you have a society of folks who have been trained, if only trained for the sake of their government, their nation, it lends the mind to the same vulnerability in the religious proclamation, especially when a government intertwines religion into the nation.
See, there you go.
Because now if I can convince you I have religious sanction, well, that's invulnerable almost. And so these things tend to weave hand in hand, and very often you have religious groups who recognize the benefit government and integration into government bestows upon them, not having political seats, but having political say-so.
Yeah.
That if that becomes important enough, then I confuse the benefit of the government with a blessing from God.
That's scary.
And I begin to promote that government.
Well, that's scary when you talk about the notion, the idea of how when you intertwine religion and government.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, people talk about the founders added in, you know, God mm-hmm. into the anthem.
Of course
no,
they did.
That wasn't added until what was it, the 50s during yeah. the Cold War, because we wanted to make it seem like
benefit.
We had a moral God is behind
us
during the, yeah.
Yeah.
So
sign on, and you have to do that in America because of the separation of church and state. I've got to convince the church to sign on. They're not compelled like they were in England or in Germany or in other nations or in Islamic situations, but I'm talking about just the Western related history. Because it's separation of church and state, because we profess a value of freedom, now I've got to convince you to sign on.
Yeah.
And so if I can convince you to sign on by saying, hey, this nation is really, in so many words, a part of the church.
Yeah, yeah.
Church is a part of the nation, the foundation of the nation. Well, now I can get the church to sign off and convince those good churchgoers to pick up a gun and go to war.
Hmm.
Never mind what Jesus said about, you know, peace and nonviolence, et cetera. But this is you should do this.
Again, this is Dr. Keelan Henson and Pastor Joe Hill. We want to thank those in the chat room for joining us. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, jump in.
Yeah, let us know if you have any opinions, perspectives, ideas, or comments. Type them in, let us know, and we'll respond. Do you feel like religion is religious institutions have been used to control people, to control thought? Do you think that they're necessary? Think about yourself. Think about the people in your neighborhoods. Think about the people in your communities. Do you think that the people in your lives, and you know them and you know you, like, do you need an anchor? Like, do you need an anchor to bring you back to center? Like, these institutions are necessary. Now, me personally, again, Joe, me personally, I always, when people ask me about religion and spirituality, I always joke and I say, anything that stops you from climbing in my window with a hoodie on is a great religion. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, to me, whatever your brand of faith is, whether it's Christianity, whether it's, well, Buddhism is a philosophy, I guess, but
yeah.
whether it's, you know, whether it's Islam or whatever, if it makes you want to be a good person, what's wrong with it? You know what I mean? I think if it makes you feel whole and it makes you great and it makes you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why I look at it as a better or worse or good or bad. But I see the control aspect and perspective, but I also see how having those institutions around us again can serve as an anchor for some.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Good. They've done tremendous good. And the idea of having an anchor versus a bridle in your mouth. We're using a lot of metaphors on the show. Y'all gonna have to get over us. But those are two very different things. To have an anchor, to have a true north on my compass that helps me understand and define where I'm going, versus having a bridle in my mouth that makes me go a certain way. Now, either one works fine for keeping somebody out your window, I guess. But then there is also the outcome that derives, I'll be dramatic, forgive me, depravity and corruption, which often is, although the religion means to guard against that, it can also produce that. Because what happens to the folks that get cast out? Let me make this a little bit less dramatic. Keelan and I grew up in an age of the church when the big weight, the big no-no in the sermon was premarital sex, teenage sex, yeah. having babies. Okay. I know personally many a young person who was put out of or voluntarily left the church because the message they heard was, you don't belong here. Perhaps you heard God doesn't love you or God's mad at you, etc. So wind this up now. Good God, I was a teenager. That was the 90s. Gosh, I'm feeling old. But wind it up now. Do I have to say 30 years later out loud? Because that hurts. wind it up now. You're looking at a generation or two or three who have not had the influence of that anchor because that anchor forsook their mother or their father or both, because that anchor defined them as less than, not good, bad, what have you. And so although it can do tremendous good as an anchor, it's also an institution that, because it claims to be the voice of God and the divine and what's holy and good in human community, when that casts somebody out, what's left for that person except to find your own way? What's left except to accept the identity that the church itself put upon me, that I'm the sinner, that I'm whatever, unworthy, the backslider, etc. And so it can be a very vital anchor, but when it becomes a bridle, and being a bridle says either you walk the way we're telling you to walk, step by step, or you're out. If all that's left is out, then you, what's left for you out there?
Yeah.
Except to find your own way, which may be hateful, which may be destructive, which may be harmful, which may may discover love out there.
Put a pin in that idea, yeah. Because for those that may be listening, we're gonna do another show about people who living in the street.
Yeah.
Can you do drugs? Can you rob, steal, mob, and kill, and still have faith? Yeah. You know, we probably both know people who
can you be an atheist and still have faith? I happen to think you can.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, can you straddle both sides of the fence? But yeah. My question is this again: if the church or the mosque, or if
let me
religion,
say this real quick, if, we got to pick this up.
Okay.
And I'll give away the rest of the show. Is the question about whether or not you can straddle the fence or not? Or is the real question about whether God is on both sides of the fence?
That's dope. I like that.
That's two different. One's about us and what we do. The other question's about what is the full extent of God's love and commitment to his creation?
I like that.
Anyway, okay, we'll get that. I don't want to leave that hanging in somebody's head until next time. We'll pick that back up. That's a spoiler for the next show, but it's whatever. But
yeah. Hold that thought. So again, like today, we're talking about, again, are religious institutions, are religious institutions necessary? Are they a hustle? Are they a means of control? What do you say to my father? Because my father would say, God don't need your money.
Mm.
So this, my father is, and if you're listening, Dad, I love you. I know I probably shouldn't have brought your name up, but it's too late now and I already said it. He said, for a while he wouldn't go because he was like, we sending the preacher's kids to college.
While your kids are struggling.
Exactly. The preacher got a nicer car than everybody else. There's a preacher who just bought got two private jets.
Right,
He's like, if it's all about God and it's not about control and it's not about manipulation, then why do pastors, why do preachers, not just pastors and preachers, why do clergy, why nicely?
Yeah.
Why do they need all that money? Like, God don't need your money.
Yeah.
What say you to that man or that woman? If it's not about control and it's not about power, like, they're pastors and preachers that don't work. Like, the churches pay everything for them. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if we want to talk about the Bible. And again, this conversation isn't about Christianity. We're just talking about religious institutions in general. Yeah. We just keep referring to the Bible because as kids, that was sort of both of our foundations
was Christianity. Let me say this about, I think, where we keep coming back to that is because the church, Christianity, is so much a part of American culture. It is most pervasive and has so many forms because American culture so much prides independence. You keep getting these offshoots, these independent churches, these communal churches, mainline denominations that divide and part ways. It is very prolific in American society and so incredibly diverse. There are pastors like that, they're fleecing people. That's just a fact. There are pastors who live by a vow of poverty. There are pastors who get paid, but they put their whole week into the church. They're business people. They're teaching all week. They're trying to reach new folks. There are folks all through that whole spectrum between the pastor who takes a vow of poverty or the pastor that works a 40-hour job and still comes in and tries to do their best, maybe gets a chicken dinner on Sunday, all the way up to that fellow, that's got a gated mansion and two jets and wants to tell you that's what God wants him to have, and God also wants you to have it, but you never seem to get it. That's very interesting. It's such a spectrum. So I would say to someone like your dad, you're right and you're wrong at the same time, because to say the church is to speak about easily thousands of different expressions of Christianity just in America, some of which are under the control of pastors or leaders who are just manipulating people.
Yeah.
And that's all they're doing. Because we create a system socially and in the church that makes people very open and susceptible to a powerful personality that makes you feel something or think something new, and you just give yourself to it. Surrender is a big part of a lot of what you hear out of Christianity. But when that surrender gets manipulated from surrender to the experience of a loving God who wants a life for you that is life-giving versus surrender to the authority that can get you to that God. That's where it gets manipulative and cultish.
And that is the point, that...
Let me pause. I meant to say this earlier. For those of you that are listening in, even if you want to maybe call in or check in and just share your experience of religion, whatever that has been for you, if you just want to maybe share that experience, maybe you don't know how you want to put your ends yet, feel free to check in and just share with us your experience of religion, your thoughts about religion, or your experience of spirituality. What's working for you? What has failed you? We always mean this to be a conversation that everyone's a part of. We're offering not answers necessarily or universal truths, but a conversation that we hope you will take the chance to dial into, to check into. There are no dumb responses. We the more we hear from you, the more we can know the things we need to talk about and bring up. So we encourage you. Just chime in any way that you want to while we continue the conversation.
Yeah, and it's also important, again, and I will reiterate, this conversation that we're having is purely organic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, again, you know, we always talk about, you know, as we said before, there are four basic questions that every generation tries to answer, no matter who you are. You know, is there a God? What is my purpose? What is love? You know what I'm saying? Those are three of those four.
Yeah.
So it's like we come in and we just sort of have questions in our head, and we literally get on mic live.
Yeah.
And we just sort of feel our topics organically. So if it seems like the conversation tails off, and I know people may be listening, it's like, these guys are all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that is sort of why we like this format, and the beauty of it is sort of discovering, you know, in the moment, discovering and having those light bulbs go off.
Yeah.
Like, that is what we like about having these conversations. So if it seems like we kind of veer off and we come back, and that's a part of why, like, we don't necessarily, we have a general idea of what we want to talk about, but we don't like things to be scripted, you know, step by step.
It's not a presentation. Well, one reason we call it synergy is Keelan and I have been talking like this for years, and in the midst of all our meanderings and all the digressions, once in a while one of us says something, and it's almost after you say it and hear it come out your mouth, you go, oh, hey, that was, we should have caught
we
that.
We should have wrote that down.
And so we came up with the idea of the name of the show, and it'll come up in later shows, this idea of synergy. The idea that you can take two existing people with their set of ideas and their conversation, and in the midst of the sharing, something uniquely new can come out when you're engaging with each other, not just dancing around in your own head all the time. And so we look forward to expanding that conversation to include your voices and other voices to see what new things, new understandings can come around And sometimes just the experience of knowing that you've been heard, that you have something to share, and just know you have a place to share it. We hope this can be that kind of space for whoever's listening at any time. So this is your space as well as it is ours.
And again, while both of us sort of grew up Christian, and as I've grown and developed and evolved, my spiritual beliefs have sort of branched off. This isn't a Christian conversation. Like, we just like to talk about spirituality, this sort of connection that people feel something larger than them. So if you're a Wiccan, if you're a witch, if you're a Wiccan, whatever, like, we got people, we got some people slated to come in that's going to talk about LSD and altered states of consciousness. Again, like, what is consciousness? What is awareness? So not just spirituality and religion. It just so happened to be the topic for today. Again, we got people coming in and talking about consciousness, altered states of consciousness, LSD, all types of stuff. Again, we're just trying to figure out, what is this awareness? Do you feel like there's something larger than you, or are we? Is there something outside of us? You know, we're just interested in all of those different types of things.
Yeah, we don't need to debate anybody or argue anybody down. That's not the point at all. Just share what you have to share. We may offer some counter positions, or you may offer counter position to us. It's not about starting a brawl or a fight or debate. People have different points of view, and we want to be in this space able to listen to all of those together. So, but yeah, for me, you know, Keelan mentioned, you know, for me, I think we may resort back to some gleanings from Christianity, just because that is our personal point of departure for a broader spirituality. I am a pastor. I have been to seminary. I read the Bible, you know, daily, read a lot of Christian thinkers. But what I'm always thinking as I read those things is not to memorize them and just sign off on them, but to try to feel, what do they really have to say in a broader universal context that can really be integrated into somebody's life as they move through the day by day. Because if a spirituality, if a faith can't do that, you know, I have to question its validity.
Yeah.
If it has to be something separate from the rest of life and removed, that does me for a spirit, a God, a force that's moving through everything. Why would it exclude some part of the life experience? But so anyway, so that gave you some sense of where we come from. Not trying to defend anything or sell anybody on anything. We're just having a conversation that we'd love for you to join.
And for me, again, I grew up Christian, but I'm in a space and a place now that I think religion is a giant mirror that somebody broke.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
and everybody walked around it and picked up a piece.
Yeah.
And when you look in it, it's a reflection of you, and it looks like it's the truth. It appears to be the truth, but you don't realize it's a piece to a larger puzzle, from my perspective.
That I can figure out if I take the time to look at you.
Yeah.
And not just my little piece of religious mirror.
Yeah, so for me, it's like trying to put the pieces together. Yeah. I see bits and pieces of truth, and beauty in a lot of religions and philosophy. So for myself, I'm trying to get all these pieces together from Islam. Like I was telling him, I don't know. Like, people talk about Islam, like, you can't be like you can't be a crappy Muslim.
No, you can't.
Like, there's certain foods you can't eat. You pray a certain amount of times a day. There is a beauty.
Well, I guess
in that
you can be. I mean, there, I don't know. I mean, but, every Muslim does it. I could say I'm Muslim and not do it.
But the point is that, like, it is a practicing faith.
Right.
Like, I might not be Muslim, but I appreciate and love the beauty of that. Like, Buddhism, you know, right thought, right speech, right mind. There's a beauty in it. Like, for me, the trick is trying to put these pieces together to figure out, you know, how to make me a better me, as opposed to following one philosophy.
Yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
Islam's a great example of a faith that requires and demonstrates such a wonderful devotion, and how a mind that comes into that devotion can then be co-opted by a national propaganda that says this nation is Muslim.
Yeah.
And it happens here too. A national propaganda that says your nation is Christian, and how that can really catch people up. There is nothing evil about Islam. It's a beautiful text to read. I know some beautiful people that practice the faith, none of whom have any sense of signing on or agreeing to, you know, a lot of the madness that people get manipulated into that happen to be a part of that faith. But it's no less ugly or frightening than what Christianity has done historically.
Yeah.
When you go back as far as the Crusades, but even not as far back as the Crusades, slavery. Christianity signs off on that.
Yeah.
How can someone go to church, leave church mid-service, go to a lynching, and then go back to church and keep singing?
Yeah. And see, that is the issue.
That's another show, I guess. But,
no. But that's
historical fact.
That speaks in line with today's topic. So I think that when people look socio-historically, what religions have, what institutions have done in the name of God, what religions and institutions have done in the name of God, that is what makes people say,
we don't need this.
Not just Christianity. Yeah. Institutions are a hustle.
Yeah.
I can look on, if I feel a need to find God, I can look on the internet, I can think, I can search, I can ask people questions. But I think it's when people look back, and again, all of these institutions have probably done way more positive things than they have negative, but it's always the negative things that stick out at you. So when people think about slavery, they think about the Crusades, they think about slavery, they think about all these other things, and they go, man, religious institutions are used to control people, they're used to manipulate people, the preacher got a jet, like all of it is some bull, and
what
it all
happens,
needs to be done away with.
The reason that judgment happens is because the systems in what they profess is so perfectly pure and good and right. That when you forsake that at all, the whole system's compromised.
Gotcha.
And you double compromise it when you try to explain away the way you failed your own system.
Yeah.
As a leader or as a group. So once you set this standard.
But you have to do that. You can't say, listen, I'm talking about to an everyday average cat.
Yeah.
You can't tell me as an everyday average person on the street, you know what I mean? Follow God, you know, hey, it ain't perfect. And you know what I mean? I think about women too sometime. And I lust after women too sometime as the preacher.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But hey, come and follow me. I'm going to be like, well, if you do. If you act just like me, what am I going to follow you for?
Yeah.
I'm here and I'm in this place and I'm following your religion because you have the answers to make me whole and make me better. I'm not here for you to tell me that I'm probably going to still do some of the stuff that I've always done.
Yeah.
Then what I'm here for? So you have to put on this facade that you are perfect and have all the answers.
Only if I need some advantage out of the system.
How is she going to get me to follow? To get me to follow.
But see, maybe I don't need you to follow me. That's what the institution does wrong.
Gotcha.
I don't need you to follow me. First of all, let's not excuse. There's a big difference between. I'm not saying that the system, because it fails, that's okay. You shouldn't blame it. No, you should blame it. I didn't mean to imply that. If the system is speaking truth about a God that is life-giving and loving and generous to the poor. And has a calling of accountability to the rich, but your system doesn't do what it professes as its values. I'm not saying excuse that. I'm saying you have compromised the system. Let's say it this way. You have revealed the flaw of the system, because if your system is a system that finds those compromises acceptable, there's something wrong with the system.
Hmm.
And we're talking about the system, not the man. And no person warrants being followed indefinitely, or even followed at all. I don't need a follower. I might want you to listen to me long enough for me to kind of, again, show you the way. Mm-hmm. Now, to the other question, I think at this point it is not entirely impossible. Enough has been written. enough has been, I mean, just libraries full of books about religion and truth and what people have found and experienced. If you are literate and want to take the pursuit on for yourself, I don't know, maybe you don't need somebody to tell you. Maybe I can just tell you a couple good books that helped me get along my way, and let's get back together and talk later. So I can tell you what's right and wrong, but I might get something from you.
Yeah.
So maybe it is possible.
Yeah. We up on an hour. We're up on an hour. So what is the answer to the question? Yes, no, maybe. So are institutions necessary? Are we at a space and a place that more harm is being done than good?
I think that's very possible. Not necessarily are we doing mean things. Are we hindering people? Are people being hindered from growing? Ooh, I don't know. I might have to say the institutions as they currently exist and function, I think I might have to say yes to that, even as a pastor.
Wow.
institutions in general as they function.
You do know you said that on tape, right?
I said it on tape. Institutions as they currently function. Churches have to repent sometime. Institutions have to repent. I think it's fair to own the fact that the way the institutions generally function, requiring allegiance and obedience to a human authority, in that sense, they fail. I think I got to leave that there. I don't think I can do a lot of good, sure, but do they fail? Do they fail people? Yeah. What else can you say and not lie?
Wow. That's awesome. All right. We want to thank everyone who, you could have been anywhere today, but you decided to hang out with us for a little while, and we appreciate it. Again, Dr. Keelan Henson, and this is
disclaimers in there.
Pastor Joe Hill. Again,
disclaimer time.
Again, if you'd like to send us any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. Again, the podcast, Mahogany Love and Light. You'll see three shows there. I do a show on love, intimacy, and attachment on Sundays. It'll probably be Sunday at 6 today. I mean, Sunday at 6 this week. In regards to love and intimacy there, I'll be answering emails. I had a men's panel a couple of weeks ago, and I'll just be sort of answering and discussing emails for the week. But Sunday at 6, I also do a show, Brother to Brother, which is Thursday at 9 o'clock, where we just sort of talk about contemporary community and cultural issues. And then Joe and myself weekly, usually on Fridays around this time, around 11 o'clock, we'll do Synergy. And again, we just talk about spirituality, what is consciousness, and everything from, you know, different religious perspectives, different spiritual perspectives. Again, we got people talking about consciousness, altered states of consciousness. We'll have book writers come in. We'll have all sorts of interesting programming. So please follow us if you can. But we thank you all for joining us. And again, peace and blessings to everybody out there. Okay.
Bid you good day. I probably should say, for the record, since I am a pastor, I still do want to say that the perspectives and views and ideas shared on the show in no way are meant to reflect any particular denomination's beliefs or doctrines or ideas of any denomination, of any congregation, of any member. This is just two proud individuals sharing our thoughts and ideas and hoping that you will do likewise with us in the future.
All right, everybody have a great weekend, have a great week, and peace and blessings to you, and hopefully we'll see you next week. And if you like my story, fine. But ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one, and I was their mama's only son, with no idea what I'm gonna become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long before. Then I finally saw the sign, and I made it on down the line. One step at a time, I feel better. I can smile at it now, I feel better. Oh, better. And even a little is still better. Oh, have mercy on me. Oh, it's probably plain to see that I got a whole lot of pain in me, and it will always remain in me. So cold, it's a crying shame. Yeah, here I am trying again, 'cause I refuse to die in vain. The circumstances put soul in me.